The Naples of England by Andy Christopher Miller. Chapter 3. Message in a Bottle. Turrets and battlements, crafted with patience and precision. Corridors and cloisters, enclosed and open stairways. A working drawbridge and a keep, all fashioned with affection. The fort that Grandad Miller made me as a Christmas present when I was 8 years old was perfect. I associated Grandad with Christmas because of it, and the fact that he and Granny usually visited us on that day. Granny Miller wasn't my dad's real mother, I knew that. She was Sam's second wife, my dad's stepmother. Somehow this rested sensibly within the order of things. Some people had mothers, others stepmothers, and my dad had one of the latter. The Granny Miller I had known was a full square person. I remember her in her Christmas Day best, black and shapeless, with straight and fine grey hair, cut at an even length. When I'd not seen her for a while, she merged with the fearsome Giles Granny in my father's Daily Express, and, from my mother's anxiety before her visits, I knew there must be some justification for this comparison. My mother, on her way home from town once, had called in on Granny to ask whether she needed anything fetching from the shops, only to come away with admonitions stinging in her ears. She had two young boys at home needing looking after. What was she thinking about wandering round town and calling in on people? Keeping a cautionary eye on her when we were together, I avoided her wrath, never falling within its orbit, nor, to be fair, witnessing any of its beginnings. Smoking her senior service, talking in an intriguingly deep and matter-of-fact voice, like a man, downbeat and cynical sometimes, she also kept an agreeable distance from me. Grandad was altogether different, in appearance small and wiry, and in manner watchful, appreciative and understated. Nowadays the contrasts might be readily noticed. Back then, and to me, people existed in each other's presence, and that was that. Compatibility was not a notion that I heard entertained. She was lucky to get him. She was only an old washerwoman from Fleet, after all, really, my mother explained. When they visited on Christmas Day, my mother would wash up after lunch while Granny slept in front of the fire. I found having to suppress my amusement at her whistling breath and occasional abrupt snorts excruciating. The four of us males, my grandfather, father, my brother and I, would get the table ready, then cut, shuffle and deal the cards, the ritual opening of the pontoon game. "Have you got your money then, Grandad?" my father would goad. "What about you two? Are you all right?" he would ask, turning to us, knowing that we could not be this close and still be unprepared. When we were younger, we'd played for matchsticks, but now that I was about to leave primary school, we were allowed halfpenny stakes, a penny maximum. We had left behind the make-believe. Now there was the sweat and dirty copper of real currency. Grandad smoked Capstan Full Strength and said very little. "What are you doing? Sticking?" He never removed the cigarette from his lips, allowing the wonderful architecture of the ash to bend towards collapse by minute degrees, while opaque blue and grey serpents wreathed about his head, some disappearing into his nostrils like sleek and eager parasites. He studied his cards to the exclusion of us all. I thought, at times, when the smoke diminished, that he might be minimally moving his head, as if reckoning his hand. My father always pushed for a brisker pace. "What do you got there? 17? What are you doing? Sticking?" Nothing. An intake of breath, words possibly struggling to form in the tiny movements of his head. Then again, nothing. "He's got 17, haven't you?" I wondered about Grandad's supposed deafness. How could we really know whether my dad's raised voice was in any way more effective? Perhaps there would be no communication until we all shouted our every word, or used metal cones as loud hailers, like in the Beano. "He can hear all right, he's just acting daft. You can hear, can't you? What is it, 17? Sticking, aren't you?" Then the delicious reward. Grandad would emerge from the smoke, from his silence, from the darkening afternoon. "Eh? What are you doing? Come on, buying, twisting, sticking. Let's be having you." I would be animated on my chair. My father would ask me once more to stop wriggling, but as the possibility of entering another, even more protracted cycle looked ever more likely, there was no place to turn from the tension. Nobody could leave the table to switch on the light. Granny might at times shuffle herself. My mother might quietly enter the room and take a chair. The gloom would add an increasingly despairing dimension. And then he threw a halfpenny across the table. After all this, he was buying. "Buying on 17? What he got there then? 15? The most superficial glance at his new card, and then another halfpenny flew across the table, with the same apparent disinterest. "Bust," said my father, confident in his challenge once Grandad had turned the corner of his final card.
"Stick."
He'd done it, and it was wonderful. Better than anything on our new television, and he defeated all my watchful scrutiny. Neither could I discern the extent of my father's possible complicity. No scripted performances could evoke from me such a longing for resolution. A playful wink just to me would have been a Christmas present indeed. The old magician and his cloak. The illusion of being slow-witted and deliberate. No let-up. Lost endlessly in oriental seascapes for all any of us knew. Grandad had been a sailor in the Merchant Navy, finishing his working life as a stoker on the Channel Islands paddle steamers. When he was approaching 65, the shipping company told him that he would soon be too old to be shovelling coke down in the furnace room. It was time to think about retirement. Leave all that bending to younger men and enjoy the salty spittle upright in the outdoors. He protested that the work was not beyond him, and demonstrated that, with the cigarette gripped in his mouth and proving no hindrance, he was the better of any of them. Hardly speaking among the high piles of coke, sweating and steady-footed in rolling seas, he was completely at home with the huge-bellied forces of fire and steam. But he was made to retire nonetheless, and sadly, quietly, accepted what he would have felt to be a great betrayal of his loyalty and resolution. My father said that Grandad walked at an angle, leaning over to one side, because he had spent so much of his life at sea. I sometimes spotted him from the top of our bus coming over Westgate Bridge, hurrying towards town, where he had a new evening's and morning's job, clearing up the glasses after hours in the basement bar of the Glengarry Hotel up on the seafront. The story was that although a Guinness drinker by nature, he went round the tables clearing sops of many varieties by drinking them, unable just to pour them down the sink. Off to work at 10:30 at night, home at around 1:45, then back to clean up first thing in the morning, ready for a brand new subterranean day. With all the leftovers he could drink and the opportunity to be helpful, my father said it was the ideal retirement for him. I called on him on my way home from town once or twice and was not sent away. Following him one morning when I was 9 or 10 from the front door, through the dark hallway where musty coats hung, into the back parlour, he said, "You've come at the right time." On the table was a large whiskey bottle on its side, and inside a mess of wood, fabric and waxed twine. "Watch this," he said, steadying his breathing to control against any cloud of smoke from his cigarette that might obscure his eyeline. Carefully, the tiny muscles around his mouth regulating his efforts, he drew towards him the threads hanging from the bottle's neck, and the muddle of its contents began to move, began to assert itself into the full blossoming of a rigged ship in sail, decks, masts, canvas against the wind, ropes taking the tension. He let out a small breath, a pinched but deep satisfaction. There was nothing here that words could improve upon, although they tumbled out from me indiscriminately. He said nothing in reply, either absorbing or deflecting my gabble, but smiled and nodded at the bottle in front of him on the table. In this dull back room, with treacle-like varnish on the panelled wall that held in the stairs, I had seen the birth of a morning at sea, fuelled with enough confidence for a full circumnavigation, able to hold a determined course beneath the most perverse or alien of constellations.